Blog Talk Radio.
Daniela Hernandez from Dartmouth College. I'm white, and I am celebrating Cinco de Mayo. You know what? I'm having a fiesta. I've got pina coladas, I've got daiquiris, I've got margaritas, and of course, cerveza. Guess what else I have there, Daniela Hernandez? I have racist white burritos, I've got chips and salsa, and of course I've got the biggest bowl of guacamole you've ever seen in your life. Well, thanks to you there, Miss Hernandez from Dartmouth College, and that coward little dean that gave into your selfish, ignorant, heartless ways. Well, there's not going to be any money for heart disease this year. That's right. That was a simple the fundraiser for heart disease, but this little girl got her little sensitivities all out of whack, and it was so racist that somebody wanted to raise money for heart disease. We all know how heart disease and raising money for people who don't have the money so they can get, well, their heart fixed, we all know how racist that is. Well, I hope that makes you feel good, Daniela, that you got this little fundraiser canceled. And I hope you have a very happy and safe Cinco de Mayo, you little creep. That's right, you're a creep. You are heartless. You are thoughtless. You are selfish. You are ignorant. And you're just a downright creep. I can't stand. I mean, you know, I am sick and tired of this Uber PC crap. And for what? For what? What do you get by this? What? Well, you get a fundraiser canceled because a little girl is too sensitive, because they used the word fiesta. Well, I'm not afraid to use the word fiesta, Miss Hernandez, and I'm white. Call me up and let me have it, huh, sweetie? You're a creep. Shut up. All right, let's move on here. This morning, we have Nancy Rubenstein-Delgaitis, who's going to be showing up. She's in Alaska. Her fiancé yesterday was at the protest in New York City on the American Psychiatric Association, which looks like it was a great success. There was lots of people. There's lots of speeches. I've got some sound bites. of what went on there. There's some speeches. We're going to talk to her about that. And we're also going to talk to her, about her article. And there is some eye-opening stuff in this article, stuff that I didn't know, stuff that I knew but didn't acknowledge. And that's the problem. People know things. It's not like they're not aware. They just don't acknowledge it. And that's the point. We have to acknowledge this stuff. We know this stuff is going on, but we are refusing to acknowledge it in ourselves. Before we can get somebody else to believe it, we have to believe it ourselves. So that's what it takes. So before she calls in this morning, I want to cover real quick. I want to talk a little bit about, and this goes along with what she will be talking to us about. I want to talk about our government using psychiatry as a weapon. And that's exactly what they're doing it. They're using a weapon to target you, to silence you, to incarcerate you, to take away your guns. Because we all know that Second Amendment, I mean, come on, that's racist and it's homophobe and misogynist, and we just can't have it. And unfortunately, far too many, many cases, they use psychiatry to torture you. That's right, torture. When they throw a 14-year-old girl and lock her in a room by herself with no medical attention, mental abuse, physical abuse, and drug her, God only knows what the drugs that they gave her. That is torture. That is torture, period. Well, this article here, and I do believe it's from the Oath Keepers. Now, if you don't know who the Oath Keepers are, look them up. They're a good bunch of guys. I've met a number of them myself. They're all over the United States, but I have met a lot of them here in New York. Look them up at oathkeepers.org, and you'll be able to find them. Well, they've also got their oath. Well, this is their oath. This is what they're about. Before I get into the story, I want to just give you a brief rundown about who these people really are. The first order of their oath. Now, we all know about oaths. Well, oaths seem to mean absolutely nothing anymore. The hypocritical oath that these doctors and psychiatrists take, I guess, you know, that means absolutely nothing anymore. Well, their first oath is, I will not obey orders to disarm the American people. I will not obey orders to conduct warrantless searches of the American people. You shouldn't have to take an oath on this. We've already got a constitution that says you can't do this. But now we have to have people take an oath to say that you won't violate the constitution. I mean, that's pathetic. I will not obey orders to detain American citizens as unlawful enemy combatants, which, thanks to the Obama's magic pen, he now has the right to do just that. You see, without having any evidence whatsoever, if they deem you to be a threat, you're going to jail, and they can keep you there for as long as they want. They can just call you an enemy combatant because you dared to criticize the king and his administration. Well, they're coming after people like me and people like you who are listening to this program today. Bloggers, anybody on the right, anybody on radio, anybody who disagrees with, I guess, this whole movement, this whole liberal movement, whatever progressive movement, whatever term you want to call it. Well, if you would go against them, well, then you are a threat to the government. Well, let me tell you something, government. You are a threat to us. That's why we are criticizing you. We don't throw you in jail, which we should, but we don't. But here you are throwing us in jail because we dare to criticize you. Well, I guess that First Amendment, let me see. Oh, look, First Amendment's gone. I'm looking at my Constitution. It's gone. It's wiped away. There's nothing left of it. Not even a period. Ah, Jesus Christ. This is starting off to be one hell of a morning. I will not obey orders to impose martial law or state of emergency on a state. Now, I'm sorry, but I don't know where martial law is in the Constitution, and I read it again yesterday, and I couldn't find it. I don't believe in that martial law crap. I'm sorry, I don't care. Circumstances, there are no circumstances that you need martial law. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I don't buy any circumstances where you need it. It's all about control. It's all about power. Power! I will not obey orders to invade and subjugate any state that asserts its sovereignty. I will not obey any orders to blockade American cities, thus turning them into giant concentration camps. That's right, concentration camps. They've got these FEMA camps already set up. They do have people in them already. This is what it's coming down to. If they don't, if you go out and you criticize this government, they can take you, put you into these camps. And what psychiatrists do, they give you these drugs. Now, there was a drug, and we're going to get into her article. But if you were a runaway slave, there was a mental disorder that you had, according to these psychiatrists and these so-called doctors. Imagine that. A runaway slave is mentally ill because he ran away. He's got a mental disorder because he didn't want to be somebody's slave, and he ran away. That means you have a mental disorder. Well, to me, it seems like the slave master would have more of the mental disorder than the slave. But that's me. I'm the crazy one. I'm the whack job. I'm the freak. Unbelievable. Well, in any event, these Oath Keepers, they are a list of, I'm not going to go too much into it. I can go on for hours. And I want to get this done before she calls in. But they are a group of firemen, police, military. I'm not sure if there's any doctors or medical professionals in there, but there should be. But these are actual professionals that like I said, with the cops, they're now being used. The police are now being used. They're brainwashed. They go to these police academies. There is no teaching of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights is not even mentioned. And it's obvious, because if it was mentioned, we wouldn't see the police be doing the things that they do. We would not be seeing that. But there I am. I'm going against the government because I'm anti-government and I'm anti-law enforcement. Well, it's just the opposite. I am pro-government and pro-law enforcement, but I am pro-responsible government, responsible law enforcement. There's a big difference. Being against irresponsible government and irresponsible law enforcement is not being against government or law enforcement. Well, let me get into this article. Well, it looks like we have Nancy on here, and I won't be able to get into it, but this goes along with it, and she can explain a lot of this, what's in here now anyway. So let me see if I can push the right button this morning. Hello, Nancy. You're on with the captain. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Ken.
Hey, how are we doing today? How are we doing?
Very well. It's a lot earlier in Alaska, but it's a pleasure to talk with you this morning.
Well, I'm glad you got up early and you stopped me from blasting off into Deep Space Nine, which I'm pretty sure once we discuss your article here, I'm going
to
end up being
in Deep Space. I was looking forward to that.
But before we get going, I want the audience, and there was already one question in there, and I'm going to look in the chat room to see if there's any more questions. But before we get going, tell us a little bit about yourself, what kind of work you do, how you got involved in this, and then I want to cover the protests that happened yesterday, because I've got a few sound bites. I do believe it's your fiance that gave some speech, and I've got his. And then I want to get into your article of America's Sweetheart. And I have posted that link in the chat room. I've already had one of them that has already read the article. Because there are a lot of things that we've got to hit on that are very important. So briefly, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can begin our attack.
Okay. Try to do this briefly. All right. So if you go back to 1998, I was a professional recording artist and a housewife with three children in New Hampshire. And I was going through a very difficult time, and unfortunately a divorce was imminent for me. And I was given an antidepressant, and I had an adverse reaction to it, and I was told that there was no such thing as an adverse reaction to it, and that that had unmasked my bipolar disorder. And then I went through 30 hospitalizations for so-called mental illness, which was, in my case, nothing more than adverse drug reactions. And I was eventually electroshocked. I fled to North Carolina, where in 2008 I began to seriously do some research because I had supported my first husband through medical school, and so I have a science background. And what I discovered was that psychiatry is, in fact, a pseudoscience, which is not to say that that distress and emotional distress in extreme states are not real. I'm not in any way saying that. But as far as the science goes, there is no there. And
right.
So as I researched and I became angrier and angrier and shocked. I mean, I had no idea that this could be happening in my country. And I wound up finding myself unwelcome in North Carolina, and I came to Alaska where Jim Gottstein operates the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, and I've been Director of Public Education and Volunteer Coordinator for over 3 years now, working 7 days a week, because you would not believe how many people call us. You would not believe. Well, I'm saying people who are reading my article now, the reason that I'm working on this case is because this case is so far from unusual, and most people don't understand this. So that's
right.
That's me.
Well, I think the reason why people shun this kind of stuff is because not only is it just outrageous, but it's very difficult for the mind to process this kind of evil, and they don't want to accept it as reality. And I know it's difficult.
Yes,
sometimes.
And many people, yeah, I agree with you. It's true. It's true. And
of course, the media flat refuses to cover it because it might make somebody on their side, whatever that means, look bad. And if they look bad, then these reporters think that they look bad because they supported these people, which is stupid. If you're doing something wrong, it doesn't matter who you are. Even if it's your mother. If your mother's doing something wrong and doing something bad, it's not only your right, but it's your responsibility and your duty to tell her, Mom, you're doing something bad. You're doing something wrong. I don't understand why people are afraid to do that. That kind of stuff is very hard for my mind to process, much less this.
Mine
this kind
too.
Of, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I just don't get it. Now, in the protest yesterday, I seen some pictures. A lot of people sent me all kinds of stuff, and I got up this morning. My Facebook account was loaded with stuff. It looks like it was a very, very big success. I've got Jim Gottstein, which is your fiance. I've got some of his speeches here, and I want to cover this. Now, I was going to get into this article. I think it was from the Oath Keepers. Have you heard of them?
I have heard of them.
Okay. Well, they're a group of professionals. You know, police officers, firemen. I'm not sure if there's any medical professionals, but there really should be. And and it's sad that you have to take an oath that you won't violate the Constitution, which, I mean, it's just mind-boggling that you won't violate somebody's rights. You won't torture them. That's just absolutely, again, that part, my mind can't process that. But let's get into this DSM 5. And the first clip that I have to play covers that, but I want you to explain to the listeners what DSM-5 is before we play this clip so they have a better understanding of this.
Okay. So to do that, I want to explain that I was a psychotherapist in graduate school in Boston at Tufts, as a matter of fact. And
really?
That was in 1979, 1980. And at that time, what we had was
DSM. I don't mean to interrupt, but do you have to have a medical degree for that? Did you have to have
I did 3 semesters of graduate work. I have a bachelor's in psychology and 3 semesters of graduate work and an internship at a residential treatment center for adolescents in Wakefield, Massachusetts.
Well, because I know there's a difference. Like psychiatrists, you have to have an actual MD. You have to be an actual medical doctor. Is that correct?
That's
correct.
But a
psychotherapist, you don't need to have the MD degree. Well, okay.
That's
true.
That's true, but so let's talk about what the DSM is. The DSM is the Diagnostic Statistic Manual for Mental Disorders. So to understand this, you have to understand that when I was a graduate student in counseling, the DSM-3 was maybe about 50 pages long. Homosexuality had recently been demoted from being a mental illness, and So you have these disorders are not based on science, and even in the DSM, the Bible of Psychiatry, it says very clearly that it is not validated by science. Nonetheless, the American public has been sold the notion that these are backed by science. They're not. So the DSM-3 was a small little volume, and at that time there was no such thing as childhood bipolar disorder, ADHD, any of that. In fact, if you had children up to the age of 18 were considered severely emotionally disturbed, and that was the extent of how you could label them, and they were not drugged. Over the years, the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry have become evil twins, inextricably entwined, and in order to sell these drugs, the number of mental disorders grows and grows and grows, and the enormous controversy over the DSM-5 has to do with some of the things inside it, like declaring that over two weeks of grieving for the death of a loved one is a mental illness.
I know, I read that, and I just,
right.
I don't understand that.
Working on the, keeping in touch with your friends on the computer is a mental illness. It's that creep. It's this every time they vote these things in and out. They vote them. This is about money. Follow the money. You ask
exactly.
me why the mainstream isn't covering this? The mainstream isn't covering this because of the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about the drugs on the radio on mainstream. I went to junior high school with the executive producer of 60 Minutes, and they did a segment on mental illness called Imminent Danger, and it was so filled with inaccuracies because the fact is that it's the population of people diagnosed with mental illnesses are so far less inclined to commit acts of violence that, this is just fraud. And so an organization that I work for, also called the International Society for Ethical Psychiatry and Psychology, they wrote a white paper correcting every single inaccuracy. And I was able to get that document to Jeffrey Fager, executive producer of 60 Minutes, and there was no reply, and they never retracted a thing. And that's where we are.
Well, when you mentioned something about, the pharmaceutical industry and the mainstream media, well, if you look at the evening news is sponsored by one drug after another. That's all the commercials that they have is one drug after another. So obviously the evening news isn't going to cover anything with that pharmaceutical industry because they're making money off of them. They're making money.
Okay, and let's be honest. Okay, and let's be honest, it's not just the pharmaceutical industry. Do you have a 401k plan?
No.
Okay, well, I do. And the pharmaceutical share of our gross national product is huge. So we're all invested in this. This is a big part of our economy. So it's just not as so simple as to blame because we're all involved in this.
Well, it's a big web, and that's why it's so difficult to really, well, to get anybody to get involved in it, except for the American people, which aren't in that web. And it's going to be very difficult.
It's time for American heroes. It's time for individual people to take up the responsibility that we have as citizens. And yes, and just like you're doing, Ken, just like I'm doing, just like many of your listeners are doing, it's up to us.
Well, we're the only ones that – well, I'm a firm believer in we were lazy and allowed this to go on. It's not like we were lazy, but we didn't know any of this was going on. And now all of a sudden we've woken up. We've got 24-hour news. We've got internet. We've got all this stuff coming and going. And now we're starting to learn. And it's, of course, it's very difficult for people to fight all the fights that need to be fought. I mean, this is just one huge fight, but there are several other huge fights out there. It's almost impossible, but we still got to keep fighting no matter what. We got
to
keep at it.
And
boom,
we have
boom.
To pick our battles. We have
exactly.
to pick our battles, and that's why I'm here in Alaska working for the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, because in my personal opinion, psychiatry is really truly the enemy of democracy.
I have been complaining about psychiatry since the beginning I started the show. Now, look, there is some psychology that is real, but not all of it. Look, and when they give this another thing, when they give this cockamamie HDHD or whatever the hell it is, or the attention deficit disorder, okay, you're a child. You're supposed to have an attention deficit disorder. That's what makes you a child. That makes you normal. My God.
Especially if you're a boy.
Exactly. I mean, look, when your children are developing, they're finding out their own independence, they're going to be rebellious, they're going to be this, they're going to be... That's not a mental disorder. That's normal. It's the ones that don't have that. That's the ones that you got to be careful with. That's the ones that's going to get a gun and start shooting up a school. Those are the ones that you got to watch out for. I don't understand.
Except once you put the kids on the drugs, then all bets are off on the violence. I mean, look at the school shooters. If you look at one of the things I've spent the last
every
few
one
years
of them.
Doing is studying the drugs, and I have people need to understand how drugs work. You can't trust your doctor anymore. Your doctor's too busy. No matter how much you like your doctor or love your doctor is overwhelmed, and your doctor is prescribing drugs that are not well understood. We all have to be experts. These SSRIs, these antidepressants, they increase serotonin. Well, there's no such thing as a serotonin deficiency. No one's ever discovered that. No one's ever discovered any link between serotonin and suicide or depression. Yet these drugs are sold. Well, what do these drugs really do? Well, I'll tell you. If you shoot serotonin into a rat, it will attack something.
Well,
that's what happens.
Is
the most
serotonin.
Dangerous times. What is exactly a serotonin? Your brain is like a soup. There are over 200 what we call neurotransmitters that conduct the business of the central nervous system through synapses and electricity. Serotonin is a neurotransmitter. The American public has been sold the notion that serotonin can be out of balance and people get depressed. It's just not true.
Well, who doesn't get depressed? A study... It's part of being human. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody gets depressed at one point. You have to.
They do.
You cannot go through life without getting depressed at one point. I'm sorry. You can't do it. You can't do it.
But
isn't
that inconvenient for the corporate wheel, the corporate machine? How inconvenient that is. How inconvenient it is for teachers who are supposed to turn out the corporate workers to have fidgety children in their classroom who are not interested in what they consider to be irrelevant. This is about disturbing people and people who feel disturbed, and it's about a culture that no longer has tolerance for humane and differences and choices. This is all about the corporate culture.
Well, again, you're right, corporate. It's all about the Benjamins. And these doctors, if they get kickbacks, if they prescribe these particular drugs, like say there's a new drug on the market, and they give them like little bonuses. You get a little kickback the more that you give these drugs out. So, of course, a doctor's got an incentive. Oh, I'm going to get a couple extra bucks on the deal for prescribing this drug. Okay, well, you need this drug. You need this drug. You need this drug. Well, I mean, drugs are fine and dandy, but they're not the answer to everything. I don't like taking drugs.
But that's Western medicine, Ken. Western medicine is all about fix the symptoms. Ignore the root cause. So, yeah. So let's get back to serotonin for a minute. Most people think that serotonin is the brain. Only 3% of it is in the brain. 97% of serotonin is in the gut. It's all over your body. If someone wanted to do a blood test to check serotonin, they could do it in their own kitchen if they were careful. It's very, very, it's all over your body. So when you take a drug that works on serotonin, you can expect certain things. Your gut to get messed up. So typically people start taking antidepressants, they get irritable bowel syndrome. But yet, as you pointed out, psychiatry is the pathologization of human life. But one of the, you know, as angry as we can get, and I've been angry for a very long time, but as time goes on, I understand that there's a silver lining to this despair that many of us are feeling and rage. And that is that with taking responsibility, we can take control of our lives. We can take better care of ourselves. We can, you know, through diet and nutrition and keeping our relationships connected, because mental illness, what we call mental illness, is really the breakdown of connectedness. And that's what's happening in our society. Families are being broken down. And let's get back to Justina Pelletier, because this is why I'm focused on this case and have been for months now. And I want to tell you, what the media is not covering is the fact that over 40,000 people are on Facebook organizing for Justina.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Over 40,000 people. That's just on one site. That's just on one Facebook site, over 40,000 people.
Well, I know I'm
from every possible walk of life, completely bipartisan, well, multipartisan, cross-religious, and people are working together. And this is the big story for me. Dina Pelletier is not safe. And this morning, as we speak, there is a meeting going on between the Commissioner for Health and Human Services, Polonowicz, and Reverend Mahoney, from Liberty Council, who has been an incredible advocate for Justina. It's just, my hat's off. I just get chills when I think of Reverend Mahoney standing with a loudspeaker in front of the State House and talking to the governor and push, you know, it's inspiring. But Justina is far from safe, and coming up on May 24th is going to be her 16th birthday.
I know.
And that's going to be a very big day, and I hope that your listeners will get involved. We're doing this together, America. The media is not helping. Well, Ken, you are media, and you are helping us. And Glenn Beck, and I have to tell you that I'm a Democrat, and so for me to find myself, cheering for Glenn Beck was something that I didn't expect. But Mike Huckabee.
Well, this
oh
is
my
not a
gosh.
Political. This is not political at all. What's happening here? This is criminal. This has nothing to do with left or right, Democrat, Republican. This is American brothers and sisters being tortured by the American Psychiatric Association and the government. Period. That's what this is about. This is, you know, and you're
yes,
right.
It is.
Whether you're a Democrat or not. Now, Nancy, I've got a couple callers on the line. Would it be all right if they ask you a question?
Be my pleasure.
Okay, great. Now, I have no way of telling who you are on here. Your name doesn't come up, so I'm going to read the last four numbers of your phone number, and then you're going to be on. So the first one is 4168. 4168, you are on with the captain. Do you have a question for Nancy?
Hi, Captain. It's the first mate. It's Kelsey from the chat room.
How are you doing? Nancy, this is my unofficial official first mate. She's got a show on Blog Talk Radio as well, and she does a wonderful job. Her whole network does a great job on Jihad. So, first mate, go ahead and what's your question?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, Nancy, it's an honor to speak with you, and I'm just fascinated by the work, the great works that you are doing. I have a testimonial. I'll keep it very short, but then I do have my question, and then I'll hang up and let Nancy answer that. My story is my girlfriend. She was in a devastating car accident where half her face was removed. And she, of course, that would leave her in a state of depression, and she had to undergo a series of reconstructive surgery operations, and they suggested that she visit a counselor because, of course, she was depressed. It's called situational depression. What happened is that when she went to apply for her gun permit, this was on her record, and I do not know for the life of me, first of all, how they would obtain her private medical records, but they did. She was diagnosed as being clinically depressed and therefore would be volatile, in which she should not be in possession of a firearm. Okay, that's my comment. That just made me, you know, very, very ill. Now, my question is the big pharma. Now, I'm in Canada, and we had an expose about 2 months ago about doctors being wooed by Big Pharma, in that hey, if you push this drug, we're going to send your family to the Bahamas for a week. And the doctors were doing this, and they got caught out here in Canada. Just listening to you, Nancy, speak about Big Pharma, what are we to do about that? And then I'm going to hang up and let you listen, and Captain, let you take the other call.
Oh, thanks.
Well, that is the big question, First Mate. That is the big question. So just to give you a little background here, in 2006, my fiancé, Jim Gottstein, was all over the front page of the New York Times. It was called the Zyprexa Papers. Jim got a hold of internal documents that Eli Lilly knew that they were killing children with the drug Zyprexa, and among other things. And Jim leaked these documents to the New York Times and about, I don't remember how many other people, and he was hauled into court, and he went up against the big giant Eli Lilly. So you don't win in court with Big Pharma. Individuals don't win because in that case, the government recovered, I think it was $1.5 billion from Eli Lilly. But that is the cost of business for them. That's the cost of doing business. It's a mosquito bite. They just go on. Look at the sales of Zyprexa today. Look at the millions of children who are being put on, well, I don't know about millions, but hundreds, thousands of young children being put on this drug. And everyone,
well,
you know.
What's the actual reason why they got to go, why these children have to go? What is their justification for putting that child on that drug? What their justification?
Again, Ken, it has to do with inconvenience.
Just because the kid
has to do with children needing parenting, children not getting enough attention, children having real fundamental physical causes of behavior, some things that are going wrong. I mean, delirium, all kinds. That your diet, eat too much sugar, drink too much caffeine. You know what happens. Most people do. So it really comes down to a lot of witch hunting. This is so much like the Salem witch trials that it's just too, and I wrote about that in my article. I talked about spectral evidence. Once you get this popular notion, then, you know, about the boogeyman, and everybody today is fearful and confused, and it's for many people, it's a quick answer, even if it's not true, is, you know, and when you hear this from a doctor, oh, your child needs this, most people go and think that doctors are going to tell them the truth. As you said earlier, these people take an oath, do no harm. So we go into people have their children, people work, they're trying to make ends meet. It's just a crazy world. And then you have a teacher who says, your child has ADHD, and if you don't do something about it, we're going to say that you are medically neglecting your child's needs, and then you've got DCF, and you know, I mean, it's just a holy mess. But the first question about what can you do, the first thing you can do, and each one of us can do, is learn about this. Go prepared. You've got the internet. You know, and of course on television now there's all this stuff about, oh, don't go on the internet. Well, do go on the internet and use critical thinking. Don't put your kids on these drugs. Refuse. But anyone who's listening to me, I have to say this is probably the most important thing I'm going to say on this show, to be honest with you. If any of your listeners, because one out of four women is on one of these drugs, one out of five men, never cold turkey. Yes, one out of four women, one out of five men, one out of six military. These drugs are not safe.
That's almost 90 million women. That's like 90 million women.
That's right. That's right. But don't ever cold turkey one of these drugs. Don't ever cold turkey. Go online and read about withdrawal. There's a site called Beyond Meds, Beyond Meds. There you can find honest information about withdrawal, but don't expect it from the medical profession.
Well,
if they were honest about these drugs, they would not be selling them.
Well, twofold what my first mate was talking about, and second, when you said about going cold turkey. Now, and we had touched on it briefly, and I've mentioned it before too. All of these, you look at all these school shootings and these mass shootings, every one of them was on Prozac or some kind of antidepressant drug, and then they said, okay, I'm fine, they get off of it, and then within a very short time, that's when like women, they'll drown their children in the bathtub, they'll go on a mass shooting. Their brain will just—it does not know how to function because they've had this drug that the brain was functioning on this drug, and once the drug is off, now the brain doesn't know how to function on its own, and it just blows up. Now
that's exactly right. But there's another dangerous time too. The two dangerous times are starting a drug. Well, three: starting the drug, going up in a dosage, or stopping.
Well, what does the starting do?
This is a toxic drug. These are toxic drugs. There's no such thing as a chemical imbalance. So you're taking a drug that creates a chemical imbalance.
I agree.
And we
with that.
Don't understand the motto of neuroscience. You know, we act like we know all this stuff about the brain, but in reality, the motto of neuroscience is the more we learn about the brain, the less we know.
Right. Absolutely.
I know that's not very comforting to people, but these drugs are, you know, and at the same time, the reality is that these drugs are not going to go away. You don't get to take chemicals back. I mean, if you look at the past, we know that this is true. But we have to be, and it's also not fair to say that these drugs don't help anyone in any way, because that's just not true.
Well, I'm sure there are.
But it's responsible. It needs to be very short term. None of these drugs were ever studied beyond 6 or 8 weeks, ever.
Well, I had
people being told to take them for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Let me just wrap up what the first mate said. What can you do? The first and foremost thing is that the drug companies can only exist because we buy the drugs, and that's the bottom line. But beyond that, we have to stop electing people who take drug money.
Right. Absolutely. 100%. And unfortunately, it's damn near all of them. And that's the problem.
It is.
We need to get people that won't take it. And it's hard to get, even if you don't take it when you come in, but you get reelected, you don't get reelected unless you're corrupt. You cannot possibly, you might get elected for not being corrupt, but you can't get reelected if you're not corrupt. That's the unfortunate thing. But in
our celebrity culture today, another thing you can do is give them hell when these celebrities from Hollywood tout the drugs. Because in the UK, it's a whole different story. Celebrities in the United Kingdom are coming out, and like Stevie Nicks and Sinead O'Connor and all kinds of people who, you know, talking about the reality that these drugs are a disaster and that mental illness is fraudulent. And when I say that, I don't mean that people don't experience altered states or extreme emotional distress. That's real. But
sure,
the idea that these are illnesses that we know about, that these are diseases, and that these drugs help people is you know, they're management tools. They are sedatives. They are horse tranquilizers and stimulants. That's what they are.
Well, I worked with and I'm an actor. And I worked with a lady that was in a show with me, and we were talking about these antidepressant drugs, and I was telling her about how I, you know, my opinions on them, and we were talking about a mass shooting at one point, and this was a number of years ago, and I was explaining that to her, and then she came out and she says, well, I'm on antidepressant drugs, and you have to take them. Once you get on them, you have to take them for the rest of your life. And I was like, you know, I mean, this is, I mean, that's just insane. Once your brain gets on these drugs, you're right, you have to whittle it off. But how do you do that? I don't know. But getting back to what First Mate was talking about here, there's a certain criteria, and I was going to cover the article before you called in, but there's a certain criteria that the psychiatrist, the ACA or whatever the hell that is, American APA, if you disagree with the government and you're on the internet a lot and you post, I'm trying to explain myself and I'm losing it, but posts that are what people would consider anti-government. Okay, they consider that a mental illness because you criticize the government. Therefore, you are not allowed to have a gun. If you're on the internet, and you were right, if you're on the internet a lot and you talk with your friends, they can consider that mentally ill, and you are not allowed.
Oppositional defiance disorder. There are 12. There are at least 12 diagnoses for every man, woman, and child.
They call that political paranoia. So if you made a comment about what was going on in the Bundy Ranch there in Nevada, you would be considered having to have political paranoia. Therefore, they can look on your Facebook account and seeing that you posted a number of posts that had to deal with what was happening in the Bundy Ranch, and you were for Cliven Bundy. Well, that means that you're politically paranoid, you've got a mental illness, therefore your guns now, you can't even get a gun, but now you have to get your guns confiscated. So they're going to come to you, to your door, and they're going to, without a warrant, come into your home, search your home, they find anything that they don't like, and they just take it. And this is not hyperbole. This is actual physical. This is real.
Yes, it is real. People have, yes, once your foot gets dragged into the mental health system, you can expect that your door can be broken down and you can be whisked away and no one will even have any idea what happened to you. This, we're talking about KGB kind of stuff. This is what it is. And I want to make it clear that I'm not a gun fan, but the reason that I could not support any of the gun legislation is because we saw this was in big bold red writing the whole time for us. We, the second it was suggested that based on a psychiatric diagnosis, which is totally non-science, you know, it's completely subjective on the part of any mental health professional who happens to see that person, and in the eyes of psychiatry, everything is a mental illness, and for that to be involved in the decision over whether or not someone's constitutional rights are interfered with, I found myself watching everything and saying, you know, I want to be a part of solutions for less violence. I want to be a part of, you know, some kind of gun control, but this is not it. This is seriously unconstitutional.
Well, this is what they claim. They claim one in six Americans have what you call a diagnosable anxiety disorder. Now, that, first of all, that number is just absolutely ridiculous. If you've got this attention deficit stupid disorder because your teacher is boring and she's not covering or he's not covering, they're not very good teachers, so you're going to lose your mind. You know, you're not going to pay attention. Okay, you've got a mental illness. Like you said, if you're grieving, let's say your mother or your brother or your son. Now, how many mothers and how many fathers out there, when they lose a child, okay, I'm going to tell you something right now. They're going to grieve for a hell of a lot more than 2 weeks. They're going to grieve for a hell of a lot more than 2 years. I'm sorry, you lose a child, especially in a very traumatic way.
I lost my child. I lost my first child at 4.5 months old. And she's with me every day of my life. This
Absolutely.
Is insanity. If you're Jewish, your religion is now a mental illness because there's a tradition called sitting Shiva after the death of a loved one, and that
right.
goes on for a year. So that's a mental illness, yeah.
Because you're sitting on a box and you're grieving,
Let me give you a statistic, because this one blows my mind. Okay, Americans consume 50%. Of all psychiatric drugs, 50%, but we make up 5% of the demographic. So 5% of the people consume 50% of the psychiatric drugs.
Whoa, slow old silver down, Kemosabe. That's a ridiculous number here. Wait a minute, 50%.
That's right. That's why there are articles in Europe there are all these articles about America's insane. By definition, we're consuming all these psychiatric drugs.
Well, then that would mean that these people are not only on just one drug, they have to be on multiple drugs. Is that true?
Well, what happens is you go on the drug and you have a side effect, and then the doctor says, oh, no, and here's a drug for that. That's how it works. Starts
all right,
with one
I
drug.
Missed the last. I missed the last caller, and they hung up, and then
oh,
they looked
okay,
like they called
let's,
back.
Okay, let's.
I don't want to. I'm sorry about that. I did not mean to ignore you. I wasn't ignoring you. The discussion was getting going. So if your last number is 1659, you are now on with the captain. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, Captain. It's Raquel.
Hey, Raquel. Hey, Raquel. Raquel, how are
hey.
You doing?
Hi, Raquel.
Hi. How are you?
This is Nancy.
I'm good.
From...
good. I kind of wanted to talk about my article about Benghazi.
Well,
or you just want to stick to Despina.
Yeah, we're sticking on the American Psychiatric Association today.
Okay.
However, tomorrow I'm going to be hitting Benghazi. You're more than welcome to come on and talk about that. And since you're on here, you've written several articles with Justina. Do you have a new article that's coming out? Do you have any new information?
Yes, I am working on something right now as a follow-up just to kind of update people. And I know your other caller or your other person on the show went into detail a little bit. I was listening about that meeting today. So that's kind of important with the commissioner, Polonowicz, with Reverend Mahoney. And I know that that's going to be important. I have been in touch with Liberty Counsel attorney Matt Staver. He said he's doing an op-ed piece this week concerning all of these issues. I heard that the former DCF commissioner,
Roche,
she was hired as an assistant to the new DCF or the interim one right now. Like, she's rehired at $130,000 a year.
I thought it was 137, but maybe you're right, Raquel. Yes,
maybe
it's
you're
outrageous.
Right. You could be right. It could be 137, yeah.
Who cares?
Let me just for a second. I just want to thank you, Raquel. I've really enjoyed your articles, and it's really an honor to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you. It's a sad topic rather, and it's really important that people become aware of what is happening to our kids. Because
yes.
It's not just Justina. And I wanted to mention, since we're, you know, talking about her, I had a family reach out to me after they read my article, and they were down here in Florida as well. So she said she had her own story to tell, and I invited her over. And it was just so sad. I just can't get her out of my head. And it's sort of a similar situation. Well, a little bit similar. Her son is autistic and had, you know, was having some violent episodes that she was, and her mom, grandma came over too. Her and her mom, you know, basically dealt with it the best they can. You know, they had ways to control him. But they said that, you know, these were outbursts that happened, but, you know, they're parents and they love their child, and, you know, you deal with it. I mean, life isn't easy. But so they had to call the cops one night because he had been a little bit more rough than usual. And, of course, they call in DCF and they take the kid.
Yep.
So they get into a five-year – they're still in a five-year battle to get their poor son back, who now is in a psychiatric, doesn't get same similar – very, very similar to Justina, a home for teens, you know, like a home. And he's on drugs. He's heavily sedated. He doesn't get any real education. He's been sexually abused a couple of times. Nobody has been charged with that abuse, even though she's pointed it out and so on. This is really crazy, and I looked at them. They have really well documented. This is for real. What's going on? But what happened was after the boy was first sexually molested, the DCF deemed him like a sexual deviant, and they have him on a treatment that they're forcing him to masturbate for 45 minutes a day. And I'm like thinking, what? And she's like, yes. And I said, and the judge, you know, like they get, you know, like it just dumbfounded me. I can't imagine something like that for any psychiatric care for a teenager. You know, he's now 17, And she's just waiting for him to turn 18 so that she can go and pick him up finally. And now they're talking about institutionalizing him because they want to keep him in their care.
Well,
they're not taking care of him, though.
Raquel, let me ask
and,
you something.
And Florida is a pretty scary place, you know. Yeah.
For kids,
well,
it is, yeah.
Raquel, I wanted to ask you something. You said that they, this kid, this teenager, because he was sexually molested, are you trying to say that they are claiming that he instigated this molestation of sorts?
Yes, yes, they are. They did, and they probably did the same thing to the, you know, I think the first incident of molestation was another boy. He was only 11 years old. He had never any problems before that except for the, you know, his autism, you know, had these, you know, short, violent episodes. But, you know, the mom said that all the rest of the time he's just a sweet kid. You know, and every time they put him in a new school, they explained what was going on. They met with the principal. They were doing everything. And, in fact, she said she did have him on medication, and she felt that the course that they were taking was good for him. He was doing really well, you know. And then once they took him, he just went downhill ever since. And, up until this day, you know, she gets her twice a month visit for an hour supervised. He's not allowed to talk to her really, you know, without he gets in trouble for telling her stuff. So he tries to tell her stuff on the side. And basically all he keeps saying is, "Mom, when am I going home?" This is 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
if people are seething, if this is happening in every single state. I mean, every single state. This is what's happening. It's just, I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's so sick and so disturbing, and we have to stop this. We have to stop this. And the thing is, Raquel, if you might be familiar with Nancy Schaefer, was the senator for a congressperson from Atlanta, and she exposed this in great detail. And she and her, then all of a sudden one day, supposedly there was this double murder-suicide.
Exactly.
Nobody believes it. No one believes it. There's no investigation. When I tried to investigate it, I could find nothing.
That type of suicide is so rare, and it's incredulous. It just wouldn't happen that they were a happily married couple for many, many years. They had, you know, 4 or 5 kids, 9 or 10 grandchildren. That's obviously, they killed her. I mean, they killed her for exposing CPS. That's how big CPS is, because she was on the pulse of the problem in Georgia. And first they put a lot of money into taking her out, you know, as a state senator in a primary, because she was a Republican. And then after that, then they came down on her because she didn't stop. You know, they wanted to shut her up. She didn't stop, and they killed her for it. It's true. The Department of Children and Families is the most criminal organization in the country. And until people start speaking out about it, recognizing it, accepting it as the truth, we have to keep the awareness campaign up. I do have a little good news. I do have a contact. Her name is Jamie Hope. She's a writer. She's a friend of mine on Facebook, and she reached out to me about Justina because she said that she did she was working in for a state a U.S. congressman, probably she said about 15 years ago, and they were also, you know, exposing the CPS thing, and she says she has so much information for me. So we just talked about it over the weekend. So we're definitely going to collaborate, and I also put her in touch with my editor at Human Events. So I want to have her. So what we want to do is, we were talking about this Saturday, we're going to do dual articles. So I'm going to hit up social services, and she's going to hit up the education side, because what she said they're trying to do is they're really hitting up the 0 to 5. They say, you know, they're trying to present, and it's sort of UN, you know, ideas. It's a UN sort of wants this too. They want kids in school from birth. They want to make sure that your kid is your newborn, by the way, your newborn is psychologically, you know, well, you know, they want to test psych, they want to make sure they're in school, they want to force this education, public education, on 0 to five. I saw the documentation. She emailed it to me. So what she wants to do is start exposing them from the education angle, and I want to, and I'm going to stick to the social services. So, you know, I think that's something positive. You know, it's just one more person telling the same story, and the more people tell that story, the more credible it becomes. So I keep posting about it on my Facebook page, and what happens is I get some of my friends who are, you know, pretty politically savvy and or, you know people and are into politics, and they say, what do you mean, Raquel? I never heard of that. And then that's my, boom, that's my open door. Well, let me tell you something. You know me. I'm not, you know, I'm not here to BS you. I'm here because I'm telling you, I know this is going on. This is horrible. I've seen the parents. I've seen them crying. They've cried on my shoulders. I lose sleep at night thinking about this kind of stuff. The American people have to realize that every child in our country has a bounty on their head. In fact, I'm going to quote a former guardian ad litem in the state of Florida, because she told me this. She said, each child in the state of Florida has a bounty on their head. I mean, that is just the sickest thing. So now meanwhile, let me just share with you, a lot of these parents that I've talked to and interviewed, well, they've contacted their local reps. They've contacted the governor. They've contacted Pam Bondi. They've contacted everybody. There's got to be hundreds of parents so desperate. You know, they'll call everybody. They'll do anything, okay? Mm-hmm. And nobody, not one of them has the guts to do something. They even barely, sometimes they're either ignored, or they're just, oh, no, that's the Department of Children and Families.
Well, look at Massachusetts, Raquel, look at Massachusetts. I'm a Democrat. I am so ashamed. Not a single Democrat has said a bloody word about Justina Pelletier, who's been tortured for over 15 months now. I want to turn this conversation just a little bit, because I want to talk about the House bill, this bill that Steve Stockman, and Raquel, I'm sure that you can talk about this too, House bill.
Yep.
Because what can we do about this? What can we do about this? We can push this bill.
Well, the way to push a bill is to contact your representative in Congress. That's really, you know, when they start getting called, that's when they start moving. You got to light a match under their butts.
But let's explain to the listeners what this bill is. This is a bill that's been introduced by Texas Representative Steve Stockman, a Republican, in the 36th District of Texas. And it seeks, I'm looking for, I can't see it right here, but basically what it does is it seeks to strip funding from, okay.
Well, I've got
it
right here. Let me read it here.
Okay,
real quick.
Good.
The Department of Health and Human Services shall withhold all monies from state agencies or entities, hospitals, and medical facilities that, one, allow research presenting greater than minimal risk to minors, juveniles, or wards of the state, which Justina is a ward of the state. Two, deny 14th Amendment rights to the parents or child. Or three, investigate parents or charge them with medical neglect, like they did with Justina, or remove children from the parents' custody when in disagreement with a subjective diagnosis involving psychotropic drugs. Now that right there, you have to put this down on paper to say this is common sense stuff. This is stuff that this should go understood. You should not even get to this point unless you need psychological help. You know what I'm saying? But that's what that is. I mean, you're right. This does not have a chance in hell to pass. But if everybody together and they call and they harass their representative, I mean, be a thorn in their freaking side every single day. If you've got to write two or three letters a day, so be it. Do it. Be a
When I said that this doesn't have a chance, an iceberg's chance in hell, I have to amend that, because one person, one vote, we still have that in this country. We don't use it, but if all of your listeners just said to themselves, you know what, I have to do this. I have to do this for my children, for my grandchildren, for the future generations of this country, for the country that I love, and for the idea of freedom that is the basis of why people have come to this country over the last 300 years. If this is my responsibility to do this, if I go to my legislator and I say, I want to know exactly why you are not going to sign, why you're not going to co-sponsor this bill, because I'm going to campaign, you know, we can do this. We can do this. People can do this. I'll tell you, I've met so many incredible people through the Justina campaign. I'm thinking of a woman named Allie Burnett in Ohio who's dying of a disease called mastocytosis, who just has done so much for the Justina. And this woman can't even pretty much leave her home. Or there's a woman named Sarah Marie Scott in North Carolina who's got a special needs child and has to fight with the authorities constantly over every little step that she takes. And this woman has created – people are working together and I think of Sarah Marie Scott, a young mother, saying to me, I've never done anything like this before. I can't do this. And she did. She does. People do. Amy Philo, this is an amazing woman. Actually, her name is Amy James right now. She's a recent law grad in Texas. She discovered that 13 million, she had an experience herself where she gave birth to a child and she was drugged for postpartum depression right afterwards and started having homicidal ideation. This is very, very common. They started telling her, oh, you have a mental illness, blah, blah, this and that. And she said, whoa, doggy. And she didn't go with it. And afterwards, that politicized her, and she and her former husband documented the $13 million that the pharmaceutical industry spent on both sides of the aisle to buy something called the Mothers Act, which is in the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, great.
Ha, 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 ha. And it provides ample funding for the drugging of mothers on every side of the birth cycle. So Amy, to be honest with you, Amy was the person who inspired me back in 2008, because when I started discovering all of this, I had the same reaction that Ken said earlier. How do you do this? Too much. What do you do? And I saw what Amy was doing, and I got on board with that. And I think that, Ken, you also wanted to talk about Teen Screen, because Amy, continue. I mean, anyone can make a difference. But,
yeah, and
but
you know
we,
what else? That bill also, you know, isn't signed into stone. So it's something that can be negotiated in Congress, because the problem with I love any bill that says stop funding, actually. But the problem with doing that is that, you know, state governments, they will fall. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to stop the funding because they are hungry and desperate for the money. For instance, in the state of Florida, 40% of its budget comes from social services, because all this money comes from social services, human health resources, and then through social services. So that's 40% of Florida's budget. Now let's imagine that they're cut off. Well, they're going to have to fire.
Your governor would be very upset, wouldn't he?
Oh,
because
yes.
Your governor made a fortune on social services.
Oh, absolutely. Governor Scott has his money invested into the drug testing facilities. And guess what? Every time a child is taken into DCF care, well, the parents are drug tested, whether drugs are involved or not. So they got a whole bunch of parents, being drug tested. And Scott owns these places. It's
That's
like,
right.
It's ridiculous, you know. And then the other thing is that, you know, they're like the war on drugs, and then the first thing they do is drug the kid, because
That's
they
right.
have to calm the kid down, because the kid is so upset being torn apart from such psychological problems with being torn apart from a family who loves you.
Oh, the stories are incredible. I mean, one woman was telling me about how her kindergartner went to school, first day of school, gets taken aside and said, well, what do you need in case you never see your mommy again? And this kid was whisked out. Can you imagine what the trauma to that child? I mean, it is. We have got to pull together and put our politics aside and put the kids first and put our families first and just absolutely stop.
Well, let me interject
together
here real quick.
It is not a political. The Democrats, the Republicans, they're all doing it. It's not political because it doesn't matter. It's all about the dollars and the greediness. And then that they've been getting away with it for so long, of course, they become very sloppy, and they also become very arrogant. So mm-hmm. they just go on doing whatever they want because they keep getting away with it. And I think, you know, I'm so embarrassed at the politicians who sit back. They know what's going on. They have to because they're the ones getting the complaints from the parents, and they do absolutely nothing. Like I don't know, if I was a representative anywhere and a bunch of parents start calling me up, let me look into this, right? But no, these people don't. But I think a lot of times they're threatened. It's really insane, sick.
What is the excuse of Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts?
She's an idiot.
The senator for fighting for kids and student debt. Well, you know what? Our kids aren't going to have student debt because they're never going to go to school if they're drugged. And, you know, this. And Justina Pelletier is in her state. And I'd like to see Elizabeth Warren step up and at least make a comment.
I want to get back here real quick. My mom taught school for a number of years with the special ed. And a lot of these kids were, when they came into class, they were born drug addicts because their parents were heroin addicts and they were cocaine addicts and blah, 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 blah. And when the children are born, they don't know, but they are addicted to the heroin, the drugs, and whatever the mother takes in the drug. And, of course, if the mother is pregnant, that comes in with the baby. Now, what I'm trying to say, and, of course, there was a lot of problems with these kids. But when you were talking about the postpartum depression and they immediately put these mothers on this postpartum depression, my question is, now, if that child is being breastfed, what is the effect of those postpartum depression drugs to that child? Does it have an effect? Will it turn that kid?
Oh, yes. And there are birth defects.
So
I remember in Atlanta, Georgia.
They're drugging their child. By drugging the mother, they're drugging their child. Well, I mean, if they know this, why are they allowed to do it? That doesn't even make any sense to me. So I guess the mother can't, money, but I mean.
I would imagine you have a choice of not breastfeeding if you were under any medication.
Thing for your child because then the immune system can be compromised because there's all kinds of things that go on with breastfeeding. In Atlanta, I remember reading an article. This is years ago. Effects are babies. There are on-call pulmonary teams for Effexor babies. Women are put on this antidepressant Effexor not even told that their child could die of a pulmonary event at birth.
That's crazy.
It is. It's
so they're put on the drugs when they're pregnant?
Look, Obamacare is just going to, you know, force all of these medicine, you know, ideas on, you know, down our throats. They're already doing it now. You know, look at Justina. The medical community, you know, also are kind of wrapped up into this child trafficking thing, or they have the idea that, you know, their opinion supersedes the parents' opinion. And I had somebody tell me from Massachusetts herself, and basically she said that, no, that's the way it goes. We defer to the medical community when it comes to children and psych. And I said, well, is that in the law? And she said, oh, no, it's the law. And I said, no, the state legislature writes the law, not doctors. So, you know, if you could point to me where it's said in the law, I'll be happy to take a look at it.
Well, I'll tell you where it says it in the law. I'll tell you where it says it in the law. Doctors are immune from prosecution. If you are immune from prosecution, if no one can win against you, then you have unchecked power.
Why are they immune from prosecution?
Yeah.
That's because our court system does that. Well,
wait a minute.
I think it was last year in New Hampshire, there was a landmark case where they decided that people can't sue for adverse events on drugs. Can you imagine that?
Oh, are you serious?
2 years ago, North Carolina, actually this is one shining moment from North Carolina, which has really gone down the tubes, but I think it's 2 years ago, the Attorney General stepped up to stop some legislation that was proposed in North Carolina that was going to create complete immunity for pharmaceutical companies. And the Attorney General stepped up and he said, you know, North Carolina consumers deserve the same protections as 48 other states. I don't exactly know what he meant. And then he said Michigan is in its own universe. So I don't really know what that means, but that was stopped. But, yeah, at the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, every day I probably talk to 20 people who want to sue, and I have to tell them the truth. The chances of your winning against a doctor, I mean, are just so infinitesimal. And what it will take from you. Now, I did go to court, and I got, you know, trampled, and I had a judge who never met me and heard my voice say that he could tell that I had bipolar disorder from the sound of my voice in Alaska on a video. Right.
Oh.
So judges are doctors too, and it's a kangaroo court. Once you bring in it's spectral evidence. In the Salem witch trials, they'd say, you know, someone make an accusation. Oh, so and so made me have these fits, and then evidence is invisible, but the accusation is accepted as truth, and that's what's going on with psychiatry.
Right, and really not just the psychiatrists or the doctors, but the social workers.
Absolutely.
Have the same immunity, and they basically, they are practicing law. Those people who file those...
Medicine and law.
They are practicing law illegally without a license.
And they're practicing medicine illegally without a license, and so are teachers. A teacher can get a kid drugged.
Right. Right, and it's really tough on parents with kids with special needs because they're really targeted because the dollars basically triple in
and
amount.
And can you imagine what that's like for? I'm just thinking of I've mentioned her before in North Carolina, Sarah Marie Scott. Can you imagine? Is it not enough that you have a child with special needs who are not well understood, but then on top of that, you have to be afraid that the government is going to take your child away and kill your child by not
exactly
providing hear parents, they'll talk about, they took my child away and they wouldn't let me give this binder to the foster parents. It had 80 pages of everything I've learned about how to take care of my child. Oh, no, we're not interested.
No, of course not, because they're purposefully trying to break up the family. Because as soon as they have the kid in custody, well, they're not trying to, you know, reconcile, you know, or they'll tell you they are. What they're trying to do is to sever your parental rights so that they can adopt you out and get more money. You know, the cash bonuses after the Bill Clinton measure, I think 1994, which says if you are in foster care and you get adopted out, well, that department gets cash bonuses. So there's
no
incentive to keep the families away. So rather than, you know, really working with families that might have some problems, no. They want to keep you away as far as possible because they want the child to be detached from the parent so that they can terminate your rights. And then what happens is once you're in this case plan, you know, they present. So they say, okay, you have to go to parenting classes, you have to go to drug rehab, you have to do this, you have to do that, and you have to do this. Oh, of course, this is all federal dollars, you know, these cottage industries. And then if you don't do it, you're not going to get your kid back. Okay, then the parents, they go nuts. They do everything. Then they you know, say, your appointment is today, but then they say, oh, last minute. No, they're constantly
trying
to screw you up. That's what I mean. And then finally, at the end of the day, they'll go to court and they'll say they're not doing the case plan. Move to sever parental rights. And the way the law is written, if you don't follow the case plan, they can move to sever your parental rights as the law. The law says
they can do that. They can force you to have a clinical psychological examination. They can make you take drugs and that be the condition of your child coming home.
Right.
It's absolutely parents. parents listening to this, grandparents listening to this, your rights are gone. We have to take them back.
That's right, because nobody is immune.
No one is. And that's why Justina Pelletier, the article I wrote is called America's Sweetheart, because she represents everything that's
right.
going on here. And you know, let's get back to Justina for a moment. This girl is in a wheelchair. This girl is not getting medical care. This girl is not being allowed to practice her religion. She's Catholic. She hasn't, yeah. And this, and we've got to get this. We've got to get this girl.
They had her in a locked psych ward for months.
Yeah, and they told the Pelletiers that they were negligent in providing for her emotional and medical needs. Right. Yep.
Right, exactly. I mean, emotional, yeah. medical, educational, everything. You know, parents, you know, mitochondrial disease is a chronic condition. So, you know, it's not easy. They've been dealing with, you know, they dealt with it with their older child who had it. I think the grandmother has it too. It does run in families. You know, the side effects are, you know, debilitating and it's not easy on them, any parent, because any chronic illness is difficult for the child. That's their youngest child, and they've been doing everything.
And then when
with
you
them.
Have interfering and making it more difficult, it's just insupportable.
It's just not fair. And I don't.
Well,
hang on.
Let me ask you a question here. What is the real difference between a mitochondrial disease and this, what some people are considering that somatoform doesn't even really exist? What is the real difference, and how could they have misdiagnosis? I mean, are they similar? Is that how they went from mitochondrial to somatoform?
Somatoform disorder is not a disease or an illness. There is no biological marker, and as far as I know, that it exists beyond the subjective opinion of a mental health. The fact of the matter is you're talking about – It's just, and as a matter of fact, somatoform disorder is not.
All somatoform disorder is we can't figure out what it is medically, so it must be psychological. That's exactly right. Right.
We don't know what's going on, so it must be in your head. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. But you know what? There's also a diagnosis. There could have been a diagnosis of a combination. I was told that by a nurse that they're coming out. They're diagnosing with like, yes, you have symptoms of mitochondrial disease, but it's coupled with the psychological. You know, so it's just like, you know what? They want to make
listen, if you read, Raquel, I'm sure that you've gone probably on Google Scholar and looked at the papers that DiMaso from Boston Children's Hospital has written and Simona Bujerno. They're talking about, their agenda is to get a psychiatrist or mental, is to get psychiatry involved in every single case. That's their agenda.
That's right. I agree. You're right.
That's absolutely sick.
Because that's a way for them to steal kids. You know, because then they could just make up anything. I mean,
yes, and what they're saying, what really kills me, and I have that, I wrote that in my article, is that they're claiming that if only they would get psychiatry involved in every single case, then they would bring costs down. Well, let's look at Justina's case. Has that brought costs down? They've spent over $2 million.
Well, that's not coming from the state. That's coming from the federal government. So they don't care. They want that money because they just petitioned the federal government for those funds through HHS.
But the rationale that those studies are based on, let me say this to Ken. What happened to Justina is that they were recruiting for those studies on beta-5.
Right.
This wasn't really about disagreeing with a diagnosis. They were recruiting. They have NIH grants. That's beta-5 is a research. They came down there. They specialize in somatoform research, and they were looking for someone, and they're always looking for someone. So this is not about honest doctors disagreeing.
Well, I found a website that has all of these. You would not believe how many how many, not only Simona Form, but I mean anything and everything that you could possibly imagine. They have these studies, and they are recruiting, and they give the ages. They're looking for adults, but a lot of them
are. And they're experimenting on children. DeMazzo from Boston Children's Hospital has done experiments with Risperdal on young children.
Without consent of the parents, don't forget.
That's right, because they're wards of the state, and they don't have to get the consent, and that's the whole...
And why were they taken as wards of the state? Because the parents were abusive? Well, we don't know.
Because they need research subjects.
They need research subjects, test subjects, lab rats.
Exactly, right. So they just flip on that abuse. They flip on that abuse word, which is so, you know, kind of nasty, right? So when people hear... Oh, you're a child abuser?
So it's just like, you're a witch. You're a witch. It's Salem, and you're a witch.
It's Salem. Exactly. It is. And most prosecutors, they're just as guilty in civil court, in family court, in dependency courts, because they don't look at the evidence either. It's like a social worker can come in and sign a verification, which can only be signed by a lawyer, but they don't care about that. Sign a verification and say, the cat told me that the kid was being abused, and the prosecutor will say, Judge, the cat said she's an abuser, and the judge says she is an abuser. That's all they need.
That's really true.
It's a kangaroo court, like you said. The social worker who what? So what? Got a master's in something, and all of a sudden the social worker is you know, the boss of the parents? So the social worker comes in and says, I'm going to get a promotion if I pick up 12 kids this week. So, this kid, I don't like her mother. She's just, you know, I don't like the way she looks. I'm going to take this kid. I'm going to tell them that, you know, the cat said the mother was doing drugs. All right, Judge, the cat said. That's how unreal it is.
Well,
I love that, Raquel. That's I'm going to use that. It's so true. It's just insane. And can you imagine what these parents are going through? Can people out there even imagine what Lou and Linda Pelletier and their three daughters are living through, watching this happen to Justina?
And another thing, it doesn't go away. By the way.
It never goes away, and these parents don't feel that they can talk, and so they're it's not safe to talk even after they get if by some miracle they get their child back,
right.
they can't talk about it for fear of repercussions. They're never safe.
Nobody is, and they come right into the schools. The mom and the grandmother that was over my house last week. When at first everything went down, they had a friend, a relative, who worked as a secretary in a public school for many years. And they called her, and they're like, hey, you know, did this happen? And, you know, what's going on? And she was like, yep, DCF comes in here every day taking kids. They don't call the parents. They don't do anything. They just come and take them. No warrant, no nothing.
Yep.
And could you imagine going to pick up your kid and you're like, where's my kid? Well, DCF picked them up.
I've spoken to a dozen people like that in the last 2 weeks through the Justina Pelletier groups.
That's how prevalent it is. It's just disgusting. It's every day. And don't forget that these, and it's not the, you know, the foster parents, it's not necessarily the foster parents that are bad, but when they're picking foster parents, well, they hire felons, and, you know, they don't, you know, check out, you know, like the parents, they're awful, but the foster parents are perfect, as long as the foster parent goes along, by the way, because I knew of a case that the foster parent figured out that the mother was being railroaded by the state, so she decided to help the mother, even though she was just about to adopt this little girl, by the way. The parental rights has already been severed, and she's about to adopt this little girl, but somehow, somewhere, God brought her and the real mom together, and then she realized the scam. So she started going to court saying, no, this mother is a good mother, you know, and so on, and guess what?
I can imagine.
Well, they dropped her. She wasn't allowed to adopt the baby.
Did she go to jail for that? Was she prosecuted criminally for allowing the mother? Because I remember you talking about that, Raquel. She was the mother was having visits. Was she prosecuted in any way, or she just was not allowed to adopt the child?
I don't think she was prosecuted, but I have to find out. But I also know of another foster parent who was prosecuted, and also because he was a foster parent, he also figured out the scam. He started complaining. They took his kids away, his adopted kids away, and claimed abuse.
Okay, so speaking of prosecution and claims of abuse, let's also talk about this. The governor of Massachusetts comes out and accuses Lou Pelletier of medical neglect, neglecting his child, abuse, without any, you know, what kind of due process is that? What kind of due process is it? If Lou Pelletier was guilty of seriously medically neglecting his child, that's criminal. And under our Constitution, you have a right to face your accuser. You have a right to defend yourself against any evidence that is, and for the governor of Massachusetts to come out and say, oh, well, we have private secret documents, I really pray that there will be repercussions for this, because where has rule of law? And that governor considers himself to be a defender of human and civil rights. What kind of civil rights did Lou Pelletier have when that governor, without any document, without anything, just gets up there and says, oh, well, we know it. We have all the secret documents of medical abuse. If someone's guilty of a crime, they should be prosecuted, and they should have every right to defend themselves against the accusations. And but enter psychiatry, enter all this medical voodoo stuff, And where are civil rights?
Well, you know how they get away with it. Well, they bring you to court, in civil court, and they do it with the full force and effect of the government. You know, you're a parent. You're not rich. You don't know who to hire as a lawyer, and so on and so forth. Lawyers are expensive. And there they are in civil court, only needing to prove a preponderance of the evidence. And then because it's family court, well, it's a secret thing. So it's not like you can, the public has access to the records. And there's no jury. It's a preponderance of the evidence. So of course it becomes a kangaroo court, because they do whatever the heck they want. They do whatever the heck they want. Parents,
Raquel, do you know of the Brett Bond case here in Alaska? About Brett Bond, young man named Brett Bond, 27-year-old kid.
I don't think so.
A lot of people in the Justina campaign now know about this case. This is a case in Alaska. The 27-year-old young man, Brett Bond, real outdoorsman, had a reaction to prednisone. He was taking prednisone. I'm not sure exactly what the reason was, but prednisone, people have all kinds of reactions to prednisone, and this kid did, and his family took him to the emergency room, and one of the reactions that he had, he was a severe insomnia, and he was given, instead of getting to the bottom of what was going on, they gave him two psych drugs for sleep, and he started having seizures, and they took him to the hospital, and then, boom, the parents lose custody.
Holy cow.
Now, of course, there's all these allegations against the parents. So Jim, my fiancé, we are not counsel in the case, but we are consulting on the case, and we petitioned the court to release documents, because we're because this is malpractice that they're covering up.
Right,
now Brett Bond is not even in Alaska. He's been transferred to Seattle, where they're planning to electroshock this boy, this young man. Get this, you're going to love this. The parents last Friday tried to liberate him. They were arrested. But they're not being charged. But yeah, the parents drove to Seattle and they tried to save their son.
Right, and they couldn't. They were arrested.
Mm-hmm. Well, what actually happened was they took Brett, but he was on all these psych drugs and he started going into withdrawal. So they tried to make a doctor's appointment. That's when they got caught.
Yeah, this is the thing. We can't even get health care. We can't even call 911. It's the same problem with battered wives. At least, and I know for a fact in the state of Florida, if you are a victim of domestic abuse and you call the cops because you need help, right? Well, don't call the cops if you have kids, because they don't care. They'll just take the kids, because they'll say, well, you are abusive because you were in an abusive situation with your kids and you allowed that to happen. Therefore, we are going to take your children. Always. You cannot call 911. Nobody, in other words, there's no protection. Not even, you don't have any legal protection. You have no law enforcement protection. You have nothing. You have a child. You have no rights.
That's right.
And another thing, I may have mentioned this before, but I think it's important to tell again. What they're doing is they're using the Amber, because parents are just like, okay, they're in the kangaroo court, they can't win, they desperately want their kids back, and they will go to they'll find out where the foster parent is, and they will go and steal the kid back. They will. It's not stealing, it's taking your kid back. Well, the police are using Amber Alert. And how they do it is they don't give you a lot of details. They just say, this kid is missing, or this kid has been abducted. But they won't tell you that it was the parents. So they're tracking down all the parents, then they put them in jail, kids back in foster care. I mean, it's a nightmare.
Yes,
They're doing it. The founder of Amber Alert resigned for this reason, because they're using Amber Alert in their child trafficking scheme.
This is news to me. I learn something every day.
Amber Alert?
Yes.
Now, isn't that supposed to be that the child is already kidnapped? That's why you're using the Amber Alert?
I'm saying that the child was taken back from the parents, so now they're calling the parents the kidnappers.
Oh, I see.
I've seen that a number of times. Yeah, just be careful. I don't even share them. You know, like, I don't even believe any of the Amber. And it's sad, because the Amber Alert is excellent. You know, a kid gets kidnapped. You know, you want their face. You want their picture. You want to see so that, you know, anybody could run into them. But the problem is that they're using it to get parents. That's how they got two parents in Florida. They were in a hotel room with their kids. They were on vacation. Somebody called 911. They smell pot. They come in. They find a joint in the mom's purse. Well, they take the kids. They terminate their parental rights. These were two engineers, you know, professional people. No, you know, because there has to be a nexus. The law says if there's drug abuse and you cannot take the kid unless there's a nexus between the drug use and abuse. So there was no abuse there. Maybe there was drug use, sure. You know, handle that criminally if you so choose. But there's no nexus. There was no nexus of abuse. So what do? They don't care. Of course, they make up a nexus. And then they take two beautiful boys. They give actual custody to one of the grandparents. And the parents got fed up, you know, it's been going on for a few years, and they went in and they took their kids and they took off to Cuba. Well, Amber Alert, blah, 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 kidnappers, they went after them like vicious animals, like they just murdered 100 people. And they got the kids back, and the parents went to jail.
Yep.
All over a joint. All over a joint, something that's legal in three states or four states,
right,
or whatever it is.
Right.
I don't know. That's really, really sick to me.
Well, let me ask you something,
Nancy
or Raquel. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that Justina is released into the full custody of her parents today. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all over and the state.
No, Lou Pelletier is not
going to
stop.
It's not over. What they'll do is they will have Connecticut DCF, you know, monitoring. What they'll do is they'll open up a case in the court, and it'll probably drag on probably about a year. That's the usual time frame. And what they'll do is they will try to present, you know, they can bring her home, but they will have a social worker there, you know, twice a week or once a week, and they'll have the guardian ad litem come and visit, and they'll have everybody follow Justina wherever she goes, you know, the stigma, everything else. They don't care. You know, they're in charge. DCF got to be the boss. And,
that's right.
No, they'll
totally destroy this girl's life.
They'll drive Lou and Linda crazy for a year, and then Lou and Linda, and of course Justina, will suffer for the rest of their lives from post-traumatic stress syndrome, because this is not normal. This is that's what's happened. I knew a lady who lost her daughter straight from the hospital. She had a nervous breakdown. She fought them for 7 years with nothing. She had nobody, not even family. She was desperate. It was her only child. She was a late child. You know, she was about 41. And in any event, she had a nervous breakdown, and she never recovered. Such a nice lady. And she called me the other day telling me that there's UFOs on top of her house calling to her. Why is that? Well, she lost her fucking mind. Excuse me. I didn't mean to curse. Sorry. I'm from New York.
I'm originally from New York, too. Alaska's a long way
well,
from
I'm an
my
ex-sailor,
place
so you're not
going
to have offense.
Well, the thing is that when I'm down here in Florida and sometimes I get excited and I start using the F word, people get shocked at me and they're like, ooh. And I'm like, don't be shocked at the F word. Be shocked at what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, who cares about a word? You know, let's talk about what's really happening here.
Okay, and speaking of what's really happening here, you wanted to talk a little bit about Teen Screen. So let's talk about that, the mental health screening in schools, which Teen Screen was developed through Columbia University, and they later admitted that to an 80% false positive. 80% false positive. And yet now there is now a federal initiative to get mental health screening in the schools. Parents need to fight mental health screening in the schools. It is nothing but about labeling your child, and there are 12 labels for every person in that manual, and it's all about money. Your child needs to be protected from these labels. These labels can affect everything in your child's life, from friendships, from schools, employment. It's a psychiatric label is a social death, and I don't care about these anti-stigma campaigns. They're nonsense. These anti-stigma campaigns, they want everybody to be drugged and diagnosed and everyone to say, oh, that's just fine. Well, it's not. And there's no reason for these labels, and a responsible parent will defend their child against these labels, because these labels will limit your child.
We'll limit them, and then also that they're in such a rush to put them on drugs. I have a 27-year-old. My oldest son is 27 years old, and he plays classical clarinet. He went to Juilliard. He really is like a child prodigy. Really like born really smart. He was on Good Morning America one time. And he's a very talented musician. And in any event, because you know he was a little bit hyper, you know it's like a different special need almost, and. At the time in the school, you know, there were a number of teachers, including his private clarinet professor, were like, well, do you think maybe he has ADD and all these. I'm like, and I'm really anti sort of drugging kids, and I understood that Ritalin is, you know, a given to, like, all the Ritalin in the world, they're given to American kids at a rate of, like, 90%.
Right.
So I had those
one in 13 kids.
I had those facts in my head, and I went to my pediatrician, who I trusted very much, and I said, what do you think? You know, these teachers are telling me that Robert needs this or that or, you know, ADD or, you know, something to make him focus and so on. And he's like, Raquel, sit down. I'm like, okay. And he sit down, and he's like, what do you think? And I said, I think my son's brilliant. So, you know, I'm perfectly fine with the way he is. I don't have any problems with him. You know, I don't think he should be on drugs. And he goes, that's your answer. So, you know, what a great
thing. Well, bless
him.
We need more doctors like that. Bless him.
I love that guy. I love him so much. But anyway, now my son is getting his second master's at the he's going to graduate in June. At the University of Southern California, he's traveled the world. He's played at Carnegie Hall. He's played with Disney's Young Musicians. He's been on television. Now, what if What if I drugged him? I permitted him to, oh, yeah, his focus is off. That's right.
And have you know the celebrity Tim Robbins? He's done some videos about this. We are drugging our gifted children. We are drugging Einstein. I mean, the CCHR used to have that drugging Einstein. If Einstein were here, he'd be drugged.
Yeah. And then I think about it when I was a kid. I also have a lot of energy and really sort of hyper. And this is the personality thing. And, you know, the sisters, well, I went to Catholic schools, but the sisters used to say, you know, to my parents, she's out of control. I had all really good grades and everything. It was just that they were like, you got to control her a little bit more. But there was never any suggestion of drugs or, you know, any label of a psychotic something or other. No, everybody's different. We have unique personalities.
That's right.
And that's life. There's not one person that you're going to find in this world the same. So why are they trying to make us, you have to behave this way. You have to be, no, you don't. You have to behave sort of the way you want to behave as long as you're not hurting anybody, right? I mean, that's freedom.
Absolutely.
Well, it's all about control. They don't want to do, the teachers don't want to do their job. They just want you to sit there and be the little robot, and they're just going to spoon feed you the information that they want, and that's it. And if you get out of line and you question them,
let's give teachers a bone here. Teachers are not happy. Teachers are not happy about what they're being forced to do.
Well, I don't mean all of them, and my mom was there for
Yeah, but no,
40
yes,
years.
It's true. Teachers who are, you know, are not parents themselves and have not experienced the reality of the terrible twos or, you know, just childhood can very easily be brainwashed into this idea that ADHD is real, and then they think they're doing the right thing, or even if they don't think they're doing the right thing, they know that they can manage those kids with, well, what are you going to do with 30 kids in a classroom? The idea that children, I mean, we need a serious peaceful revolution in our education system. Our education system is based on a industrial revolution model that just doesn't work. Kids are not assembly line pieces, and they're not all the same. And one person's six-year-old is not the same as another person's six-year-old. And every child is a special needs child. And we have to. There's no such thing as neurotypical. Absolutely no such thing.
Right. Exactly.
I agree.
But they're forcing it on us, and it's really scary. It's really scary.
Yes, it is. It is. And I tell you what, I love Alaska. Alaska is a little bit different than the lower 48, but this is we are all in one country, and the American public has got to wake up, absolutely, and people are. Every single person who's listening to this show right now is waking up, because you're listening to this show instead of listening to Where's the Missing Flight from Malaysia.
Enough with that.
who listens to that?
Well, apparently millions of people, because they've got their ratings. They do their ratings, and, you know.
Well,
look,
but, when you're watching the news, ask yourself the question, what is it that they're not covering? And that's the important question. What is it that is not being talked about? Because that's what's going on in our lives.
Yes, right. And this is a big story. This is a big scandal. It's the biggest stain on our country, you know, since
this is children that we're dealing with.
It's like a stain of the magnitude of slavery. It really is. It's that big of a stain.
It is slavery.
It is slavery, correct.
Yes,
and the other thing is, which really freaks me out, is that this attorney general in Florida, Pam Bondi, you know, her name is on every single pleading in that kangaroo courts and civil court. So she's the kingpin. She's over there in her office complaining about human trafficking. That's like her number one thing these days. Pam Bondi is fighting human trafficking. What a great lady she is. She is the biggest human trafficker in the state. That's sick. That is sick. That's a wolf in sheep's clothes. I know the candidate against her, the Libertarian candidate, who I'd love to get elected, but it's going to be impossible because, the GOP and the Democrats down in Florida, well, they just work together. They're all big spenders. They're all, they, you know, they'll tout their talking points, but they'll steal the kids. Jeb Bush did it for years. Jeb Bush actually was part and parcel in, like, making this situation even worse, quite frankly. Like you said,
really?
This is not, you know, I'm a registered conservative, actually, but in New York still, but this is not a Republican Democrat thing. This is a human issue, and this is about
exactly.
The government using children, trafficking children for money, and it's really destroying them. And then the rates of like half the people in the prison population are, it's a high number. I don't know about half, but it's pretty high. Are foster kids?
Yes, absolutely.
Because the state has done it to them. I couldn't even imagine. I love my parents so much. I couldn't even imagine being apart
from
them
as a kid.
They
go from one prison to another.
5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, like, they say, oh, you're going to have to sleep at Aunt Lucy's house tonight. Oh, why? Stay home. You know what I mean? I love my parents. You know what? I would have been a complete basket case if somebody would have swarmed in and took me away from them.
Absolutely. That's called there is some reality to psychology, and one of those realities is something we call attachment disorder.
Yeah.
And you know, it is not okay to separate children from parents, and it can seriously affect the rest of their lives. And
that, it does.
And this is
it does
yeah,
affect the rest
this is,
of their lives. Yeah. You also have states fighting other states, DCF. For custody of kids. I mean, they're just desperate. I know a grandmother who you know, they took the daughter's, you know, kids away. The daughter became had a nervous breakdown, became a prostitute. She got herself back in order. They had terminated her parental rights, and she got remarried, and now she has a few kids and everything. But the grandmother fought for that oldest kid. She fought for years until she finally got a different state, I forgot the two, you know, it was like Maryland and another state, and I don't really remember exactly which states they were, to fight to get the grandchild back into her state, into her custody. But it took her 5 years and, like, you know, $145,000 to do it.
And look at the situation that the Pelletiers find themselves in, because frankly, Connecticut is known to be one of the very, very worst. And many people call it Corrupticut. Connecticut DCF is notorious, seriously notorious. And so if Connecticut does take this case,
they'll be in and out of Justina's home. They'll be, you know, making up things. They'll be writing bad reports, and it's going to go before a judge. And at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the judge to decide whether Justina stays home. But usually once the Well, I shouldn't say that because they also DCF also has a habit of, you know, the kids go back home, everything is fine, and then
they're not supposed to do this.
This would be illegal, but they have their caseworkers go into the old cases and start knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. We're here to visit. Can I come in? Don't ever let a stranger in your home. Unless they have a warrant, you do not have to let. Do not open your door. Do not open your door to anybody.
But that's
not
what that's what Ariana that's what Marianne Godboldo in Detroit thought.
What
Remember
happened?
Her? Marianne Godboldo in Detroit, her daughter Ariana had been given this drug risperidone. She was and was making her violent, and Marianne said, "Well, this is not a good idea," and she saw someone else, and all of a sudden there's a SWAT team around her house. This is 3 years ago. SWAT team around her house. No warrant, nothing.
No warrant.
And then she did is she shot a bullet into the wall in her house, and then she was criminally charged. But she has been exonerated. And she is a case. The black community, the autism community, the black community in Detroit all got together, and this is what needs to happen all over the country. That coalitions need to be formed, and parents have got to stop this. But even answering the door, there's no simple answer. There's no simple answer like, oh, just don't answer the door, because they can come, they can break your door down.
What I suggest is that, you know, most phones have videotapes, most phones have, you record the whole thing, you call 911, and you say, officer or sheriff or whoever, these police officers are outside of my home, and I don't think they have a warrant. Please advise. Please ask them to leave my house. I am not giving consent without a warrant. Let them. It's not that easy. Let them go and get a warrant then, because you let that foot in the door.
Yeah.
I would even put cameras or I would videotape. You record every conversation with them. And you get them on tape. That's the only thing that.
Oh, and that's what all these DCF parents are doing. They're like CIA agents. They're recording everything. They are. You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but Ken, did you want to play a clip from the protest yesterday, or did you had mentioned that you wanted to play something by that Jim Gottstein said?
But this discussion just took off, and I'm not going to fight it, man. This was
Then I'm good with that too. I just wanted to make sure that you were happy.
I'm so glad that you came on today, Nancy, and I'm very glad that you came on as well, Raquel. And I really think that we went, we covered a lot of ground here. And you're right that you have to be a CIA agent with these people. You've got to record everything, video, audio. You can't let anybody into your home. You can't take your child to the goddamn doctor when they're sick because you're afraid they're going to take it away from them. And they find out that you had a beer before you took your child to the
doctor.
Run, you're watching a ball game, and you have a...
Right.
You have,
so the question is, what can people do? What can you do? And the thing that I want to say right now is, if you don't know your neighbors, if you don't know the people in your neighborhood, it's time to get to know them now.
That's smart, too, actually.
Yes. Yeah, neighbors and neighborhoods and communities, the more people connect with each other, the more information, the less possible... I mean... Information is the enemy of tyranny. Truth is the enemy of tyranny. But look at what's happened. Our families have been broken down. Our communities have been broken down. We must rebuild them. We need to. The danger is that we all become so paranoid. My father was Commissioner of Human Rights in Nassau County in the 1960s, and he was actually in the 50s. He was on Joseph McCarthy's list. I don't know if people, your listeners, don't remember the House on American Activities witch hunt that was spearheaded by Joseph McCarthy. Well, my father was on his list. Many people committed suicide because of that. A group of people, but my father was working for the Educational Alliance in Lower East Side, Manhattan, and he was a social worker. And he was doing something called Operation Street Corner, which was getting kids involved in activities to break up the gang warfare in the 50s and early 60s, and it was very successful. And a group of in defense of my father, a group of people from Wall Street and the New York Times went to Joe McCarthy's office, and they said, take this guy off your list, and he did. Afterwards, my father made a speech, and he said, when there is no safe place to hide, the only safe place is out in the open. And I have always lived my life with believing that, and I believe that more than ever today. We need to connect with our neighbors. We need to know about our neighbors, be able to be there for our neighbors and get together on this.
And also, it's important that, you know, we all kind of have this faith and trust in authority, and of course, you always be respectful to authority. You know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be, but we have to question authority.
We have to question.
And we cannot be afraid. It just simply is not true that, well, they must, if they're the Department of Children and Families, well, they're obviously working for children and families. When we're presenting evidence to show they are not only helping, but they're hurting. So people have to say no. The government is not perfect. The individuals who are in control, not every single one of them are bad, not every single one of them, but those bad ones, we have to weed them out. We can't just sit back and say, well, if they said so, it must be true. No, it must not be true. We have to question authority, And we have to teach our kids to question authority, too. But you can question authority without being disrespectful.
Exactly. That's part of it. And ladies, I hate to interrupt, Raquel.
Yeah.
Raquel, I hate to interrupt.
I know, you gotta go.
But
yeah.
We're running dangerously close out of time. Yeah. Nancy, Raquel, both of you, you are now my two most favorite things. And I really thank you very much for coming on board. I thought it was a great discussion. I learned a lot. I'm sure my listeners learned a lot, and I'm sure the people are going to download later will learn too. Both of you are welcome aboard my ship anytime that you want. Don't hesitate. You can call back. I want to thank everybody that was listening here today live that was in the chat room. I want to thank everybody that was listening on their smartphones and everybody that's going to download. I've only got just a few more seconds left. Again, ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. And thank you, great Raquel.
Thank you,
and we will see everybody back here tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Goodbye, everybody.